wines, moon pies, and lots of throws. Prepare to catch the Mardi Gras spirit Saturday, February 14th at 3 p.m. in downtown Auburn.
Welcome to the Residences at Arbor Lake. Hi, this is Matthew Lewis. Our locally owned apartment community in Auburn provides quality independent living for those 55 plus. Nestled on 35 acres of natural beauty, enjoy leisurely walks, exercise, even fishing. Plus, choose from spacious floor plans with personalized options for your lifestyle and your budget. Come discover your new home today at the Residences at Arbor Lake on Gatewood Drive in Auburn, or visit theresidencesatarborlake.com.
It's time for something new. It's time for something different. It's time to bring the hype for the Tigers. And how do you do that? The only way you can? With a Hype Stick Shaker. Hype Fan has partnered with Children's of Alabama for the Battle of the Tigers and the Tide. For a $20 donation, you can bring the hype, get something exclusive, and help Children's of Alabama. Go to HypeStick.com to learn more, see it in action, and donate. Find us on Instagram at Hype Fanatic and Facebook at Hype Fan. Make your donation and choose your Hype Stick Shaker.
ESPN 106.7, WGZZ HD3 Waverly, and W294 AR Auburn Opelika.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at espnau.com.
Hello and welcome. It's the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with the coach, Don Dunn. Bill Cameron is out today. He is paying his respects to our good friend Philip Marshall, and we've paid tribute to Philip on Friday's show when they found out on the air, and then we shared some Philip stories yesterday.
Yes, I listened
as well, and a guy who, yeah, we're gonna smile when we think about our buddy Philip and you know the one and only, and so yeah, a lot of our friends in sports media are paying tribute to Philip Marshall today, and so Bill Cameron taking the day off, and we will we'll press on without him. He'll be back tomorrow. I'm off tomorrow because I've got a Troy women's basketball game. App State coming to town as the Trojans look to continue their success.
Yeah, in, great season
in the Sun Belt Conference so far, and they're fighting for a third regular season title under Coach Rigby. So we'll see how tomorrow night goes. But I will be off, and I'll be back Thursday before my travels take me away this weekend. I've Going to Muncie, Indiana, Coach.
Okay.
Is that one? I don't know how.
Who's that? Ball State.
That's Ball State. Yeah, I don't know how often you battled.
I have never been to Ball State. I don't think. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I don't think you were a.
At Western, we did Kentucky. We played Miami of Ohio, but I don't think we ever traveled to Muncie to Ball State. Famous person, David Letterman.
That's right.
He's a grad.
Letterman, the long, yeah, he's the most, the thing I know the most about Ball State is the Letterman connection.
Yeah, he always brought him up, yeah. That should be an interesting trip. Hopefully the weather will be decent. Are you flying or?
Yeah, we're leaving Friday morning.
Okay, where were we flying to? Indianapolis?
I think in Indianapolis, and then you because I think Ball State, I think Muncie is like suburban Indianapolis, so we're going
to. Never been there. I've been to Miami of Ohio, and I've been, of course, to Purdue, but I've never been to Ball State. So that should be interesting. Yeah, weather's a lot better today, too, buddy. It's 63 degrees. It feels like it's 90 after last week. So a little partly cloudy and 63. The days are getting longer, which we enjoy.
So, Coach, were you out there this weekend in the weather?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sunday night when I went in, you know, they close at 3 on Sundays, so the old smoker gets kind of cool. So it takes me a little while, but that's the only really bad night because of the wind. But I wasn't out there Saturday when it was really bad. Saturday all day long. Yeah.
Well, glad you were able to stay warm. And that goes for everybody sort of braving.
Yeah, the elements. I guess we're going to get some more next week.
Yeah, that's my understanding is that there's some rough stuff.
It is winter.
Yeah.
It is February. We get spoiled.
But there are some folks still digging out of.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
well, Oxford, Mississippi,
exactly.
Still destroyed. They're still out of school.
Yeah, I mean the
women's team's based out of Birmingham right now.
I guess my understanding is the Arkansas, Mississippi. The Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana corner of, you know, is still, because that's not an area that always gets a ton of winter weather. You know,
right,
I know.
Right. Mostly ice, yeah. If they do get anything.
I dealt with some ice in Huntington, West Virginia, Coach. That was the thing.
That's scary.
You know, it's the cold weather wasn't so bad, although it was closer to zero than I generally like it to be. But it's the thought of walking around on icy sidewalks and seeing there was a pizza place near my hotel that had been open since the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, I got to try this.
Oh yeah.
And I got to even brave some icy sidewalks and stuff to walk over there. And I'm glad I did, but I say that having not twisted an ankle or fallen and broken a wrist or something and
hit your elbow. Oh, that
it
hurts.
There were some icy sidewalks.
Oh, I
there
know.
And that's a cool, like, Huntington's right on the Ohio River.
Yeah, kind of an old rusty coal town.
So the river is the border of West Virginia and Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of how they, you know, that's, you know, you're right on the Ohio. It's near Lexington, Kentucky, and it's right on the Ohio. Right on the Ohio River and right on the Ohio state line.
Mm-hmm.
Cool town. that I look forward to exploring. You know, when I know that we're headed there, it was blanketed in snow and ice. So we're glad we were able to get the game. That's a place that knows how to prepare and gets it enough. But
yeah,
still,
they have enough resources. Ooh. Yeah,
but still, you're not driving around quickly. The roads were you know, caked in snow and I recognize, like, there are some places that got it a lot worse than that. So
yeah, it's tough times last week.
Anyway, so yeah, hopefully everybody's staying warm and staying safe. As we mentioned, Bill Cameron's off today. He's remembering our buddy Philip, and let's. I think we are able to connect with someone we join. Someone we talk to every Tuesday, and that is the voice of Auburn University athletics, and someone who is doing an absolutely tremendous job this season, chronicling the men's basketball team, and that's our good pal Andy Burcham. How you doing, Andy?
Dan, I'm doing well. Don, good to hear from you as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And it feels like the, you know, with even with a lot of stuff going on, National Signing Day tomorrow, Coach Golish and his assistants will be talking to the media. Men's basketball playing the Iron Bowl of basketball this Saturday. A Super Bowl that features multiple Auburn players that we remember from the recent past. And the game this weekend, you know, up in Knoxville that you called. It still feels like Philip Marshall is maybe the right way to kick things off, because he's someone you knew for a long time, Andy, and someone we talked to pretty often on the show and we told stories about, wanted to give you a chance to tell folks a little bit about your memories of our buddy Philip Marshall.
My first Auburn football press conference was in September of 1988. I had just moved to town, and it was Auburn, Tennessee week on the plains. And this is when the press conference was held at the old Sewell Hall across the street from the Auburn Athletic Complex before the Donahue Residence Hall there. And the press conference was back in the library of Sewell Hall. And then
it came with a free lunch.
It came with a very good lunch. But we would also break off, and the print media would go to the lobby and interview players, and those of us in radio and TV would go down to a courtyard that the players' rooms surrounded. And that was my first introduction to Auburn football. It was my first introduction to Philip Marshall, because he was, and this is in 1988, I mean, it was the old days of the media. It was before any social media, and you got your news either through radio, TV, or the newspaper. That was it. And so that was my first introduction to Philip Marshall. And obviously, I've covered Auburn since that time, and Philip's been a part of it long before that point, but from that time on. And many times of late, when Philip and I would be at a press conference together and just chatting, it would be stories of, well, do you remember what it was like when we covered this, or you know, we kind of looked back on the careers. And like everyone, I was shocked to hear the news of Philip's passing. He's one of those historians of Auburn. He's one of those historians of SEC football, because he didn't cover just Auburn. He covered sports, college sports in this state. And he always had an opinion. He never tried to, he never worried if his opinion was popular or not. And Philip was old school beat writer. And Philip, I think it was more important for Philip to be right than to be first in the story. And, you know, his father is a legendary writer, but he came from a different era than all of us, for that matter, of media. But to Philip's credit, he adapted to what media is now. And I just, you always knew of his character. You always knew that what Philip wrote, or when he talked, it was what he truly believed. He wasn't doing something to be popular. And he will be sorely, he is sorely missed. Not only for the way he covered Auburn, but just the integrity that he showed in his job. And I only knew Philip as that person. He and I were not personal friends. We were acquaintances. We laughed together, but I knew Philip as the old beat writer for Auburn and with various newspapers and publications. And then what became going to work for 247 Sports with Jason and everyone there. So he really is now one of a kind. Just because his career spanned so long in the business, and it changed so much during his time. But he did not. His integrity of covering a story, he was one of a kind, and unfortunately, the writers like Phillips era are passing, and he is one of those final folks that has passed on now, and now he kind of turns that over to Brian Matthews and Jason Caldwell and Jay Tate. Those are the guys, and Justin Hokanson, these are the guys now that have been doing it for a while. And they have a history in the business, and they have a history with Auburn. But he was truly one of a kind, and is sorely missed, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned sort of Phillips' willingness to be like Galileo, right, where he wasn't afraid to have everybody screaming, "You're wrong," yeah, at him, even though he knew in his heart that he was right about something, you know, that stubbornness.
And, you know, I mean, Phillip covered all of the major stories at Auburn, good and bad, but he also was one of those writers that when I came along in 1988 and 89 and was part of those Auburn women's basketball teams that played in the national championship, Phillip was there as well. And then, of course, he, and I don't know exactly why this occurred, but I hand it to Phillip because even after Auburn's meteoric rise in softball to back-to-back trips to the College World Series, and when things tailed off a little bit, and I think they're back on the way up with the Malvos running the show, he stayed with Auburn softball. And he didn't have to do that, you know. I mean, but he did, and it was a love of his and those players. And I applaud Phillip because he, you know, was one of a few that stayed there covering softball. And we're seeing, you know, different writers kind of finding their niche of not just the big three or the big four at Auburn, but covering everything. And Jason and Mark Murphy have always done that. So has Brian Matthews. But Phillip was one of those guys that you know, he started covering softball and women's basketball and continued to do that in his career. And probably didn't have to, but he did. And I always felt that Phillip looked for a story, regardless of what sport, regardless if it was football or basketball or baseball or you know, women's basketball. If he found a story of an Auburn student athlete, regardless of the sport, it was a story that was compelling to him, he was going to write about it. And I always admired that about Phillip.
Yeah, I feel like his influence is felt, like even though there's not one obvious replacement for Phillip, you know, or anything like that, like his influence is felt all over the beat, right? Like you named a couple of guys who have that deep knowledge, that incredible recall of Auburn's history. And, you know, Phillip, you know, Nathan will tell you Phillip was a big influence on his style of writing, and Justin shared some really cool stories about, you know, getting feedback from Phillip about different pieces in his career. So yeah, that's another sort of behind the scenes, you know, aspect of, you know, how willing and how generous Phillip was with his knowledge and his insight to some of his younger colleagues. I think that's a really cool part of the story as well. And speaks to his character.
You think of the stories that in a half century Phillip Marshall covered at Auburn. The Heisman Trophy winners, the national championships, the rise of Auburn basketball in the Final Fours. He was there
with a couple of coaching changes.
Yeah, no question about that. And now with Butch Thompson and everything in between, and it was always good either. You know, the rise and the fall of the legendary Pat Dye at Auburn, and he was there then to cover that 1993 football team that goes undefeated under Terry Bowden, and the 2004 team that now is a national champion, and then the Cam Newton, you know, 2010 team. So I mean, he was there for all of this. And further back, I mean, he was there for the entire career of Pat Dye. I mean, think about that for a second. I mean, that entire Pat Dye career. His career started with Shug Jordan, for goodness sakes, at Auburn. So It was a link to a great deal of history at Auburn. And he came from an era. His father, Benny, is a legendary Hall of Fame writer in Auburn. And he came from that area, the Clyde Boltons and John and Pruitts and all of those guys. And he was still in this era. And maybe this is what I admire the most about Philip is how much the business changed. I mean, for the longest time, you know, he being a newspaper man at times, an editor, you know, and he's not the only one that started in that, but the newspaper as we know it is almost gone now. And for a good portion of his career, that was his bread and butter, so to speak. But he made the change, as has Jay Tate, for example. There's another guy that started in the newspaper business and now has made the move into what is now, it's not even print media, it's digital media at this point. So I admire Philip a great deal. You always knew where you stood with Philip, that's for sure. there wasn't a lot of, what's the word I'm trying to use here? He was very honest, and I admired that about Philip. He wasn't trying to make friends with his opinion, and in this day and age, I think that's to be applauded.
It's tough to sort of pivot from that to talking about a lot of a lot of what's going on right now. So I think if you can hang on, Andy, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, and then we will get into as much as we can in the next segment. Want to talk Auburn men's basketball? Want to talk Auburn baseball? And also tomorrow's National Signing Day, and we're going to hear from Alex Goler, so we'll talk some Auburn football as well. Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us on the phone. I'm Dan Peck. Coach Don Dunn is here as well. Stick around. You are listening to The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
At Affordable Comfort Cooling.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Coach Don Dunn in the house. Bill Cameron taking the day to remember our pal, Philip Marshall. He should be back tomorrow. Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, on the phone with us, and we let's talk a little bit about the Auburn men's basketball season so far. Auburn was one of the hotter teams in the SEC going into the weekend. Tennessee was mighty cold. You know, that was Knoxville was one of those cities experiencing winter weather, and it was a cold night for Auburn inside the gym, Food City, the arena. There in Knoxville, as Auburn, I think they'd been the more physical team in some of those games that they'd won, and Tennessee, it was the first time in a couple of games in SEC play where a team was really ready to match Auburn, and match Auburn's physicality around the basket. And when that happens, your jump shots need to go in, and that wasn't happening for Auburn against Tennessee.
Well, and too many of the jump shots were threes. Too many of the attempts, I should say, were threes. I mean, Stephen Pearl, as we've come to know, didn't pull any punches in his postgame show over on Wings 94.3 Saturday night. He felt that Auburn, and he used the word punk, he felt Auburn was punked on Saturday night, and meaning that Tennessee was the aggressor, Tennessee was the more physical basketball team Saturday night. And it was from the get-go. Auburn never led in that game. After Tennessee scored the first basket, Auburn never tied the game. So in many regards, Tennessee dominated the game in spite of the fact that it turned out to be, 10 points or less at the end of it. And Auburn, trailed by 10, I think, at half, had the lead down to 3 with a 3-on-1 break and didn't get a basket out of it. And that's as close as Auburn got in the second half of that basketball game. And it was one of the few games that I can think of for a while now where Auburn was dominated. I'm not going to say dominated. Auburn was beaten on the inside on Saturday. And listen, that's a big Tennessee ball club, but they were missing one of their starters and a couple of other guys coming off the bench were big factors. Brown and Carey, especially, were big factors for Tennessee coming off the bench. You never can question this team's heart, and it's never going to back away from a fight. Tennessee took control of the game from the get-go. And by the time Auburn responded, Tennessee had the lead and never gave it up at that point. And it's a game that Auburn can learn from. And although I think you'd love to go into a break, and this is, there's no midweek game for Auburn this week. You want to always go in with a win. You want some momentum going into that. This is a teaching moment now for Stephen Pearl and this team. And I'm guessing that those individual film sessions that those players are having with the Auburn assistant coaches are not a lot of fun right now, but they are helpful and hopefully get Auburn ready for a really good Alabama team coming in on Saturday afternoon. And it's an Alabama team that is trying to get some momentum as well, hosting Texas A&M tomorrow night, the number one team in the SEC right now, before it comes to Auburn on Saturday afternoon.
I think it also kind of feels like a missed opportunity what happened Saturday night, because Auburn did some things well defensively. It wasn't as though Tennessee had an overwhelming night offensively, and including that freshman Ament, who is going to have like that. If you'd shown me his numbers before the game, I would have thought Auburn had an excellent shot to win, right? When you tell me a guy like that is going to miss 12 of his 16 shots, and you're right, he is. Like you've been spoiled this year, Andy, in the sense that there have been some excellent freshmen. They've been Auburn opponents for the most part this year, although Auburn's gotten some production from Sebastian and Phillip as well. But you think about what Koa Pete at Arizona. And you saw how good is Kingston Fleming's right back, dating back to the Houston game, and you saw one of the very best Saturday night, and Auburn did a pretty good job on him in Nate Amen.
Well, we saw Cooper Flagg last year too, yeah. So it's not the first year that we've seen really, really good freshmen against Auburn and guys that are one and dones, and I think Amen will be one of those. I think he's a one and done guy. Going to have to get bigger to play well in the pros, but he has everything that you need at 6'10", and he can shoot the three, and he's really, really good basketball player. But you know what, Dan, what you said at the beginning, let's look at Auburn's losses in the SEC so far this year, all right? You lose in overtime at Georgia to open the conference year. You lose a game against Texas A&M where you led by 16 points and still thought you had won the game, and a three-pointer by Murphy was erased. You go to Missouri and just don't play well and still only lose that game, and then you lose this ball game at Tennessee, and I think Tennessee's a real good team. I think all those teams that Auburn has played are good basketball teams. I'm not trying to take anything away from Georgia or Texas A&M or Missouri or Tennessee at this point. But I think every one of those games, Dan, was gettable for Auburn. Every one of them was. So I don't think Auburn has been dominated in a game since the Tigers played Purdue in Indianapolis. And I don't know what that says about Auburn, but I think every one of those games that Auburn lost was incredibly winnable, in spite of the fact that at Tennessee Saturday, Auburn never led, or that at Missouri, after about the first 5 minutes of that ball game, Mizzou never trailed again. But certainly the overtime loss at Georgia, where Auburn led by three and had the ball in overtime, and the loss to Texas A&M, where Auburn led by 16 at one point in the second half, and still we thought had won it. So every one of those games was gettable for this Auburn basketball team. And now what happens over the second half, more than the second half of the conference year? Because, it all starts again with the first of two games against your arch rival on Saturday, and an Alabama team that has been in the midst of a great deal of controversy right now about whether a player should be playing for them or not. But I guarantee you Auburn's preparing for Bediako on Saturday night or Saturday afternoon. And an Alabama team that was absolutely dominated by Florida on Saturday. And now they get the number one team in the SEC tomorrow night and in Tuscaloosa. And guys, I won't be surprised if Alabama doesn't give Texas A&M their second loss of the year. And then you know they're going to bring it when they come to Auburn on Saturday. So you really have to strap it on the Southeastern Conference this year. Anybody, not just Auburn, anybody. It is as evenly matched in this league as we have seen in quite some time, in my opinion.
Yeah, the thought that an Alabama team that could lose like that to Florida could turn around and beat the team that's currently in first place a couple of days later, and it wouldn't be all that shocking if Alabama beat.
Wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me in the least.
No, I mean, so that's, I think that tells you, you know, how evenly distributed some of these teams are, and we'll get into analysis of teams like, you know, Vanderbilt and Arkansas pretty soon because they're on Auburn's schedule.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a good point because Auburn gets Alabama Saturday afternoon at 3. Our coverage on Wings 94.3 begins at 2:30. Turns right around, a short rest, a short prep as it gets ready for Vanderbilt a week from today. And we'll have to talk, by the way, about my visit next week because the timing's not going to work. We'll talk about that later. Auburn gets Vanderbilt a week from today at 6. And then on the road to Arkansas for the first of its home and homes in the Southeastern Conference. That's your next three games for Auburn. And every one of those games is very winnable for Auburn. Every one of those games will be extraordinarily tough for Auburn. But that's just the way the Southeastern Conference is this season.
And for Alabama, between the fact that you've got the bye week this week and Alabama doesn't, the game is at home. And it feels like it's got some outsized stakes in, you know, these next three feel pretty important to Auburn. So yeah, this one's a big one for Auburn on Saturday.
This next one is going to be a blast.
Yeah,
to be around. I mean, you listen, if you're in our business, these are the kind. I'm not saying that the other games aren't, but these are the kind of games that you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh man, I cannot wait to get to Neville Arena today. And begin this day of basketball. Because, I mean, heck, students have been camping out already. They're there.
Yeah.
The tents are set up, aren't they?
It's
outside Neville Arena. They've been there for a while getting ready for this game. Dick Vitale, for goodness sake, is going to be in town for this game. So, you know, from a national standpoint, ESPN thinks it's important if Dickie B is going to be on hand. It's going to be really crowded down there where we are on Saturday, but I don't mind rubbing shoulders with an absolute legend and Dick Vitale on Saturday. So listen, when I was 6 years old, and this is what I knew I wanted to do for a living. These are the kind of games that you live for. And I'm not saying that next Tuesday against Vanderbilt or Valentine's night at Arkansas isn't, but buddy, this is the kind of game that you dream about. And I cannot wait. And Neville is going to be absolutely crazy on Saturday afternoon when Alabama comes down. And I guarantee it, it'll be just the same when Auburn closes the regular season at Alabama in March.
They'll be ready to rumble in Neville Arena on Saturday, no question about it. Andy, I guess real quick, because we still got I'm making up the rules. I'm at the board today. Real quick, what are you excited about as baseball looms? Andy, still there?
How about that?
Oh,
I think I'm back with you now. I lost you for a second.
No, I got you. I was going to say, what's got you real excited with the baseball opener approaching?
Oh, well, I mean, right now it's expectations for this Auburn baseball team, but that freshman class from a year ago is back as sophomores. They've added some tremendous pieces to this ball club to replace some outstanding talent that is now in pro ball for this team. Talked with Butch Thompson today. We did our first installment of This Week in Auburn Baseball. You can watch that on War Eagle Plus. You can listen to it wherever you listen to podcasts as well. And I think he's excited about this team. But knows that they've got to bring it. But Auburn is as high, ranked in the top 10 just about everywhere, as high as number 5. I can't remember the last time that an Auburn team had this much expectation going into the season like this one does. I think Butch Thompson likes where his ball club is. I think he likes the pitching and that what it has shown. Now we're a week and a half away from opening day against Youngstown State, a week from Friday. So I'm excited about this Auburn baseball team. And, you know, season tickets have already sold out. Last year, Plainsman Park became one of the best baseball atmospheres in the country. And, guys, in years past, we couldn't say that. But with the addition of the premium seating and a brand new feature out there beyond right center field wall, that's now sponsored by Yeti. And so we're going to have some fun with the students, the students out there beyond right center field wall. And it's a great place to watch a baseball game. And it's a tough place for opponents now to come in and play. And it all starts a week from Friday, Youngstown. I would think by this time next week, we'll probably know the game times for next weekend as well. I think the weather looking that far ahead is going to warm up a little bit, but they've not announced game times yet for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday against Youngstown. But very, very much looking forward to Auburn baseball as it laps over with Auburn basketball. And I'm looking forward to Saturday for Auburn basketball against Alabama.
Andy, I was in Conway last week calling a game, Troy at Coastal, and got to bump into a couple of my friends, including Sam Wiederhoff, who we had on the show a couple times. He was along for the ride there, broadcasting Coastal games last season. And those guys, like, they went to the College World Series. Like, they made it to the finals. And all those, you know, the thing,
national championship.
And the thing that the impression that blew them away, though, like, as special as Omaha was they'd never seen anything like those two games at Plainsman Park. Right? Like, the atmosphere for those. Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that's the norm. That's not the case. But that's what you expect now from Auburn baseball. That's what you expect out of Sanford Stadium, Hitchcock Field, at Plainsman Park. And my hat's off to that Coastal ball club. They came to Auburn and swept the Tigers as a bitter end for Auburn to what was a terrific season for Auburn baseball. And then they make it to the championship series in Omaha. And I think they're going to be really good again this year, too, by the way, that Coastal Carolina ball club. They returned too much pitching not to be a factor again. But the thing that excites me the most about this team is that sophomore class now.
Yep.
And those guys that played such an important role for Auburn a year ago, and now they're back for their sophomore seasons. And, you know, Frelick behind the plate and Rembert, who's garnering all kinds of preseason All-American, and well, he should be. He was one of the best players playing on Team USA last summer. And I think for the most part, Auburn is healthy at this point of the season. And, you know, a healthy Eric Guevara could be an absolute difference maker for Auburn. Todd Clay from Auburn High School is here after transferring in from UAB. And from all indications, has had a terrific offseason. You know, this is going to be a fun ball club to watch. I hope you have your tickets, because this is going to be a fun – I think it's going to be a very, very fun season at Plainsman Park, and a brutal SEC this year. The SEC is loaded, and Auburn plays every good team in the league, I believe, this season coming up.
That's the way it goes in this this league. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. Have fun calling the action this weekend, and we will talk to you when we talk to you again, because, like you said, next Tuesday is not going to work because you got a Vanderbilt game to call.
Here's what happened. When we're typically talking, I'm going to be talking to Stephen Pearl doing his pregame show. So that takes precedence.
You can just
next
put
Tuesday.
We can just call you. We can put you on speakerphone. You can just have that. You know, we could broadcast that instead. If you anyway, we'll work out the logistics. It was great talking to you as always, Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
Guys, you have a good day. Good day. Have a good one, guys. War Eagle.
Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us. We will try to get caught up after that, but we move things around for Andy Burcham because
right.
He's worth it. One of our best pals.
Yep.
Stick around. More of The Drive coming up, including your calls when we come back.
at Affordable Comfort Cooling Systems.
Welcome back. The Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Coach Don Dunn. Again, big thanks to Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, for joining us for a couple of extra long segments. As we, and we'll have those available for you. If you missed any of it, we'll have it for you on the podcast once we load that up after the show is over. Should be calling up our pal Jake Crane from Crane and Cone in hour number two. But in the meantime, love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Coach, Super Bowl.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Yeah.
I still get a kick out of making something out of the Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
Whether
it's the your various dips and snacks,
right,
and barbecue antics.
And the commercials.
Commercials
still are fun.
Right. I'm not terribly familiar with the music of Bad Bunny, but it's a halftime show that I'll be looking forward to seeing curious to see what kind of theatrics we get
shenanigans.
Yeah, I want to see what happens. And so and then Seattle and New England, which are two teams that I recognize. It's you don't have a team that necessarily profiles as a Cinderella in the sense that these were two of the best teams in the regular season.
Yeah,
this year, but I don't know if they were necessarily two teams that a lot of people looked at
and thought
back,
they'd be here
back in the summer and it's time for. You know, it's time for Seattle and New England to rise above the pack. So it's a Super Bowl that I guess it reminds me a little bit of like Rams Titans in that regard, where it's like that. You know, that's going back a ways, but it's like
down to the last play.
But that was a Super Bowl where like those were two of the best teams of the regular season,
right?
But they weren't necessarily two teams that everybody had picked early, in the preseason, and they weren't necessarily trendy picks to win a lot of games. So I'm curious to see what happens between the Patriots and the Seahawks, and then everything around it. Do you have something that you gotta have on a Super Bowl Sunday?
No, probably chicken wings. I'll do them myself. A lot of Donna will make probably some Rotel, dip and
chicken wings and cheese dip are two of the better answers on the board.
You can drag it through the cheese. Now.
No, you can drag. Look, you can put anything you want in the cheese dip. What I mean?
But it'd be kind of laid back. We don't have any big plans, or any parties or anything.
I might check out. Kim Mulkey's in town with the with the LSU women earlier that day.
Right.
I might go to Neville and
good to see good teams.
Yeah,
she's always gonna pull something out of her hat.
Who knows on Super Bowl Sunday
with her wardrobe and her antics. Love her, some people love her, some people don't.
Coach,
but she can coach.
And Coach Vickers is having a team. It's struggled.
It's tough.
Well, it's struggled against a couple of top teams in the SEC. I thought Dawn Staley said some really nice things about him after the South Carolina game. Explaining that like she believes is a guy who is
going to get it done.
He's going to get
takes
it done.
Time.
Yeah, but it's
and it's tough, And
they play hard. And
they've had some big wins.
Yes,
and they've had some blowouts.
Beat an Alabama team that's got a fantastic win loss record. So
LSU women's good basketball. One of the better teams in the country.
If things in hour two get real dry, we will go back to like your musts for chicken wing preparation, because with Super Bowl this weekend, I actually think there are some people listening to the show that would love to know Coach Dunn's do's and don'ts, your goofus and gallants of chicken wing.
And
prep.
Sometimes they're better than others.
No, we'll talk about that and potentially a whole lot more as we continue are we all caught up? I guess we're
pretty close.
No, I think we're okay. Yeah, good. Okay, good.
Yeah, talking about the Super Bowl, I didn't realize they both have really good records. Seahawks are 16-3, and the Patriots are 17-3. I did not realize that they were that good on paper. But you're right, I would have never picked these two teams back in August. I just didn't even enter my mind about the Patriots.
No, so it's
and I do like their head coach. I think he's old school lineman, linebacker, or whatever.
Oh yeah,
and played for the New England Patriots.
Yeah, player. I mean, it's
hard nosed.
And that's fairly. I mean, not you have guys who were notable NFL players becoming NFL coaches. Someone who had a pretty decorated career for a team coming back and winning a championship as the head coach of that team is
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, and it's a rare deal in today's NFL. So yeah, that'd be a huge thing for Vrabel. But yeah, no idea about the game.
I mean, no, I have no clue.
I know I probably should have some. You know, it is funny to me because it feels like Darnold, ever since he started playing well with the Vikings at the beginning of last year, people have thought it was kind of fraudulent, and we're just sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right.
And, I mean, I remember talk of, like, how long before he plays his way out of the job being, like, a really prevalent that was some of the chatter with Sam Darnold in the offseason. Was like, yeah, I mean, the Seahawks paid him, but how long before they went and got Milroe from Alabama. And, you know, it was a question of, well, how long before they make plans to go with somebody else. And all Darnold's done is play like one of the best quarterbacks in football and outplay the Niners and the Rams to get to the Super Bowl. So yeah, I think it'll be it's an unlikely rise from a guy who looked completely finished a couple of years. I mean, remember Darnold got that job in Minnesota because the draft pick blew out his knee. Right? Like J.J. McCarthy got hurt, and so suddenly the guy they brought in as the veteran backup gets thrust into action, and all he's done since then is play fantastic football. It's a little bit like Drew Brees going from guy who didn't work out, like it's just not in the cards for this guy. He got a shot and he didn't really play all that well, to becoming perennially a great quarterback in the league. And so yeah, I don't know what the future holds for Darnold, but I don't think anybody thought he had a stretch like this
left in him.
Yeah. Baker Mayfield, another guy who kind of got off the mat after, like, oh, it looks like he's going to be a backup now forever. He's going to be his opportunity to be a franchise quarterback came and went.
Yeah.
So I guess it has happened a few times lately, but it looks like it's happening with Darnold, and you know, here he is starting the Super Bowl in a couple of days.
Yeah, I believe kickoffs are about 5:30 our time. Remember the old days? Well, I'm old enough to remember the first couple Super Bowls. They came on like at 1 o'clock. Wasn't that big deal, really? You know. And
I want to say the Cowboys are my first like vivid Super Bowl memory. Yeah. Would be I remember. You know what? I remember the Bills missed field goal being in the culture.
Yeah. What, they went 4 in a row?
They went to 4 in a row
and didn't win a one.
lost the one to the Giants on the missed field goal. Yep. Parcells. Got stomped in a couple of them, right? But still made
Super every
Bowl,
year, you know, the, 4 in a
the
row.
Jim Kelly game. But I do sort of remember, like, I remember that being in the culture, but the thing I remember the most is probably that sort of run by the Cowboys, the Aikman, Emmett Cowboy thing, just feeling
pretty
like
good teams.
Yeah, and in that era of, you know, the Jordan's winning 6 championships and that Yankee dynasty is starting to rise a little bit. Like you're getting that in sports, and it's not. Look, I'm not saying it's better than seasons where you don't know, or it's, you know, that you have a lot of different teams that are capable of winning it all. But it did feel like you were swept up in that, like, oh, this is like a dynasty era almost of sports, and yeah, it's been. It's been a while since, I mean, I know the Chiefs had their, you know, the Chiefs, and I'm sure they'll be back, but no, felt like those Cowboy teams were just overwhelming in their greatness.
Yeah, they had a nice run. Miami had a little run there, you know, the undefeated team.
Oh, sure.
Which is still a record, which is pretty amazing.
And then the Belichick Patriots, Belichick.
Pittsburgh had a couple of runs. San Francisco back in the day had their run. Denver, yeah. A couple of teams have won back to back, which is hard to do. But
look, so looking forward to the game on Sunday, and like Andy said in his segment, like it's gonna be a busy weekend. Like
yeah.
This, I mean, a lot of
yeah,
a lot of buzz around Iron Bowl basketball, yeah. A lot of buzz around Auburn, Alabama on Saturday. Right.
And then you got the women at LSU, Neville. And then the Super Bowl, and
yeah.
Then, signing date tomorrow.
Baseball just
starting a week from Friday.
Baseball just around the
wow.
corner. So I mean, yeah, a lot of different
softball, everything.
A lot of different things getting started in the world of Auburn University athletics. We'll be covering as much of it as we can here on The Drive.
For sure.
I'm Dan Peck. That's Coach Don Dunn. Bill Cameron should be in the house shortly. We'll be back. You're listening to the. I'll get an update from the text box in just a second. But
sure.
Yeah, you are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Following is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with the coach, Don Dunn, taking you through the next hour or so here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com. Bill Cameron should be back tomorrow. He is remembering our pal, Philip Marshall. Should talk to Jake Crane a little bit later in this hour. We'll talk some SEC basketball. There are some games... I believe there are some games on the schedule tonight. Coach, I made the point yesterday. Like it feels like a great time for Auburn to take that bye week, take that extra few days to get ready for Alabama, because this team, I mean, it's a physical style of play, and
right.
You saw a couple of guys, Keyshawn Hall with the finger, Kevin Overton with the head injury.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of guys who maybe could use a
couple of days off.
Yeah, a day off or two. You've had a team or two where it's like, "Boy, you're ready for the boy, you guys yeah. are ready for the bye week."
Yeah, I'm sure coach gave him probably a day extra off just to get away. Sometimes it's good to get away from the building, get away from the assistants, get away from the head coach, and, you know, just get treatment, maybe shoot around on your own. I know they'll have some open gym time. And just, you know, kind of recharge your batteries.
Yeah, get a night maybe in your own bed without
yeah.
a real tight schedule,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
I mean everything's so regimented.
Go get a home cooked meal if you live close enough. Or
yeah,
something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or, you know, roll with a teammate, go get one with him. You know,
that's
I mean,
right.
I'm sure probably a little tough for Jovich, right? I mean, it's, you know,
yeah, it'd be hard
home cooked meal
yeah,
back
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I don't know what he eats.
Bosnia and
goulash or something.
Serbian Montenegro, but it's. That's another reason why I feel like Saturday has outsized importance too. Like this game against Alabama, it's always big, but the thought that you had the bye week and they didn't, and it's at home. I mean, I think both teams are trying to get to, I would think with these non-conference schedules, tournament positions not in play unless you go like 7-11. In the SEC, I would even think at 8-10, they both probably did enough in non-conference play to feel good about getting in. Now 8-10 in the SEC, I think for either Alabama or Auburn, you could be talking about the play-in game
mm-hmm.
potentially. Like you could be talking about having to win your way into the round of 64.
Yeah.
But no, I would say at 9-9 or better, you know, you feel very solid about being in position. The question, I mean. You could find yourself in that 8-9 line, which is not where you've wanted to be in recent tournaments. You know, the one seeds have been very good. The more SEC wins you can collect, the better off you could be as far as how secure. I mean, I think Auburn, these next three games, You win all three of them. It's tough to imagine Auburn being in a bubble team type of position. I mean, they could be, you know, with eight conference wins, what, 8-4 mm-hmm. is where they'd be if they won these next three. I mean, you could be in very solid position as an NCAA tournament team because not just three SEC wins, but three SEC wins over, I mean, Bama, Vandy, and Arkansas are three of the better teams in the league. I know Bama's only 500 in SEC play right now, but Bama's got a tremendous strength of schedule and has some impressive wins. So I would say these next three are big for
sure. You got to take care of your home court too, and that'll be big Saturday.
334-321-1390. Would love to hear from you. You want to jump in and talk with me and the coach? We could get to chicken wing do or don'ts in with Super Bowl around the corner.
Yeah,
I make a pretty good spinach artichoke dip, coach.
Okay,
the big debate there is like how much of it's mayonnaise, how much of it's cream cheese, how much of it's you want to mix in anything else. Some folks are big sour cream users, and that mm-hmm. That's where the debates go. What's going in besides spinach and artichokes? What kind of cheeses? What kind of veggies? Yeah. You know, that sort of thing. It can be a real debate. But we'll get into sort of Super Bowl prep stuff, you know, if we need to. But let's get to Philly Fanatic, who is on the phone. How you doing, bud?
Hey, you were getting into nostalgia about the Super Bowl. I remember the first one.
You remember Super Bowl I? We had someone in the text box, you know, inviting, saying you should invite memories of Super Bowl I onto the show. And so, yeah, what do you think, Philly?
Okay, January 15th, 1967, Memorial Coliseum. It was NFL and it was AFL. It was called the World Championship Game. Basically, Bart Starr, you know, that was 35-10 Packers. Bart Starr was the MVP. Paul Hornung is the running back. And for the next few, it wasn't even a sellout. And for the next few years, the NFL kept beating the AFL, and people weren't interested. It wasn't until Joe Willie said, hey, we are going to beat them, that all of a sudden, hey, this is something here. And then, you know, it all of a sudden, you know, even that first game, all they had was a marching band. And then
Philly, before it was a Super Bowl, what did the two leagues each declare their own champion, and it was just sort of, you know, both teams celebrated as though they were the champion and they didn't play in a big game between the NFL and the AFL?
Yes, and that's when the Giants had all those great teams, and well, Green Bay was good as well. That was a rough and tumble league where there were no everything was outside.
Right.
You know, there was no dome.
Bad
and they
weather.
They played in all kinds of – and you could see these guys were bloody. You know, back then, the face masks were just a bar. And they would fight and scratch and hit each other. And, you know, there was this bloody mess. And the rules were kind of, well, there were no rules. You know, just – but and you know, when I can remember that first game. We didn't even watch the halftime. We went out and shot hoops. You know, we're in Philadelphia. All my friends wanted to play with Big Five and all this other stuff. But really, there wasn't any money there. You know where the big money came in is when the .com people started coming out. When those companies where individuals all of a sudden became multimillionaires and they started dumping money into the show, a halftime show. And, you know, back then you could probably get $100,000 would buy you a full minute for a commercial, and I think I heard it was $8 million now for 30 seconds.
Yeah, I know that. I think Michael Jackson gets some of the credit for, or at least not necessarily Michael Jackson himself, but the thought that like they felt pressure to make a Super Bowl halftime show. I think in the early 90s they were feeling the pressure to book a Super Bowl halftime show that would excite young people and attract, you know, people that were fans of, you know, various demographics. And going to major pop stars was something they hadn't really done until they, you know, until I think it was, you know, 92 or 93, whenever they break out Michael Jackson as part of the Super Bowl halftime show. And ever since then, they've had, you know, much more sort of modern pop or recent sort of pop music focus to it. But, Yeah, that wasn't – I think that's happened long enough that people think it was always the case, but that's something that, that was a an innovation. I mean, there's some dusty Super Bowl halftime shows from the 70s and 80s that you can find on YouTube.
Yeah, well, you know, they brought in a British invasion band, and those guys had never even saw a football game. They didn't even know what was going on. But,
you know, they played one game at Tulane Stadium. Remember that early?
Yeah.
In New Orleans, and a couple of games at the old Tulane Stadium.
I think what was the Superdome was the first covered stadium, and that was a long, long time ago.
That was 78, according to what I'm looking at. And then, you know, they always played early January, and the first game in February was not until, 2004. You know, it used to be early January. They didn't drag it out like they do now.
Yeah, well, I think for a while they were calling it Lombardi Bowl. He won the first two.
Right.
And I think Bart Starr was MVP in both of them.
Yeah.
It was, like I said, it was a long time before the AFL could even beat the NFL. People were just kind of like, humming it all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just amazing what it's come now. And it wasn't even a sellout. What are they, 10, 20, 30,000 for a seat now? Some ridiculous amount
of money? Yeah. I guess we need to look up what a ticket costs for the first one.
I suspect a hundred or two, a couple hundred maybe.
If that, right? I mean, going back to the '60s might have been cheaper than that even. But no, it has changed quite a bit, and it's turned into And I think this because of the lack of outside storylines. I mean, you've had Super Bowls, and I mean, you had Mahomes in so many of them the last couple of years, right? And you had Brady and Manning, and you know, without the household name player, I feel like this Super Bowl is going to really sort of test that. Is this you know, it just sort of the greater social eventness of the Super Bowl rather than, oh yeah, folks are dialed in for this specific football reason. It's just sort of it's on in the background during your party. I think is how this game's going to and hopefully you get a good game, right? Hopefully you get a game that's close to the second half.
A lot of people just watch it for the commercials. They don't even care for football, and it's whether the Budweiser commercials always has to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen to the horse? He's going to be with a puppy or whatever.
Oh yeah.
But I think Mean Joe Green, I think, is still listed as number one.
Yeah, the Coke. That's an awesome.
What about Apple? What about Big Brother? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Big Brother and Apple 40 years ago. So no, but you're right. That's and I think a lot of that stuff, like a lot of the commercials are now, you know, they're made available on social media or on YouTube. You know, in the days leading up to it, or at least extended versions of it. So yeah, I mean brands recognize, you know, how big an event this weekend is. Great stuff, Philly.
Yep. Thanks a lot.
Hey.
Bye bye.
Dan, I just got a text from my wife.
What do you got?
The first Super Bowl ticket, $12.
Okay, yeah. I thought a couple hundred seemed high, and it turns out it was a dozen. How about that? Yeah, remarkable. So 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Love to hear from you. We're going to talk with Jake Crane from Crane and Cone. In the which I'm still getting used to saying,
right?
We're going to talk with Jake in the second half of hour number two. We you know, if you missed any of hour number one, long conversation with our pal Andy Burcham, some Philip Marshall memories. Thought some really interesting stuff about the men's basketball team and a little bit of baseball previewing as well. So some great stuff from Andy Burcham in hour number one. You can catch that on the podcast. Just go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. We try to upload them pretty close to the end of the show. No commercials. And you can catch most of the conversation that we have here on The Drive on the podcast. You can also go to ESPNAU.com. Not only can you stream the show live, and you can stream all 7 hours of ESPN 106.7's original programming. The On the Line guys do a great job. Doug and the Max Roundtable is fantastic, and you can catch all that live on ESPNAU.com, wherever you are, as long as you got an internet connection. And then you can also access the podcast center at ESPNAU.com, and you can listen to our podcasts that way, so you can catch up on old episodes of The Drive or On the Line through the podcast center that way. So a lot of cool stuff and a lot of ways to catch, especially when we do something like, I mean, Andy Burcham was just great in hour number one. So if you missed any of that, go check out the podcast, and you can listen to our pal Andy Burcham talk about not just Philip, but also some great stuff about this basketball team and what he's excited about with the baseball team getting started in just a little bit more than a week. This is a big scrimmage week for the baseball team, and then they start playing for real.
Yeah, week from Friday.
A week from Friday, Youngstown State coming in, what an environment, what an atmosphere at that ballpark, especially when it's
a beautiful facility.
When it's rocking now, it's second to none. I shared the story with Andy, but you know, talking to some Coastal Carolina people last week during my trip up there to broadcast Troy versus Coastal.
Right.
They vividly remember, you know, going to Auburn and what kind of atmosphere they had to face down to win those two games and advance to the College World Series. And it's something that really made an impression on a lot of those Coastal people, and hopefully Auburn finds a way to build on that moving forward with a really exciting team that some folks have even ranked as a top five team in the preseason. So Auburn baseball getting started, and what a squad for Butch Thompson and company. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. I'll tell you what, we'll take our first break of hour number two. We'll come back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN.
Welcome back. The Tuesday edition of The Drive, Dan Peck in the studio. Coach Don Dunn hanging out as well, getting ready for, like Andy Burcham said, big weekend here in Auburn. Hate to miss a lot of it, as I will be I'll be leaving for Muncie Friday morning and calling a game in
Is the crossover when they play
the Sunbelt MAC Challenge.
Right,
And so I guess this year the men opened the season. The Sunbelt men opened at MAC schools.
Okay.
And so the men host the MAC this weekend, and the women open the season at home in the Sunbelt. So they all go to MAC schools this weekend, and I don't know how they decide who plays who. I think
right.
a formula or some top secret algorithm, but yeah. So we drew Ball State, and we'll be playing them on Saturday. But I'll be back late Saturday night, and I'll try to take in some of the festivities. I know Auburn LSU on Sunday. I've got a ticket for that one, so I'm going to try to make it. I'm going to try to make it to Neville for Auburn LSU, and then Super Bowl Sunday, who knows what kind of shenanigans could be going on around town.
There'll be some stuff happening. I'm sure there'll be some local establishments having some parties.
Yeah, I would think
specials.
Could be open on a Sunday night for the Super Bowl, but no, should be a good time this weekend. Yeah. And
Ball State's pretty good.
I know. It's
second in the Mid-American, 17-5.
It's gonna be a tough matchup for Troy. Just an odd time for a non-conference matchup, but you get both teams want to win, and these are competitive squads. So yeah, we've had some close games in that Sun Belt. You know, the Miami of Ohio men are still undefeated.
That's unbelievable.
I think they play tonight, as a matter of fact. But they go to Marshall as part of that as part of the Sun Belt MAC deal. And so that game's, I think that's like a national television game on Sunday. But so the challenge could be getting a little bit more attention with the Miami of Ohio Redhawks having this fantastic season. But it's an odd little break, but yeah, so the whole Sun Belt is in action tomorrow night, and then everybody takes a break for the Sun Belt MAC deal and gets back in action, gets back in the swing of things next week. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We're going to try to talk with Jake Crane in just a couple of minutes. Love to hear from you. I'm running the board and hosting the show, so let's get to the phones. Caller, you are on the air. Who's this?
Hey, guys, it's John in Auburn.
How you doing, John? Good to hear from you.
Good, good, good. Hey, so I saw this the other day, and I don't know if they're the only SEC school who's done it, and I want to see what's your thoughts on just how this would be across the board. But I believe I read where the University of Tennessee is raising their season tickets and raising ticket prices for football overall 10% for the 2026 season for a talent fee.
Yeah, I mean, team.
I find that interesting because if just looking at the SEC as a whole, I feel like it's almost becoming baseball where there are large market teams and small market teams. And I just wonder in a Stark Bowl, in a Fayette Bowl, maybe even on the Lexington, how long these smaller market teams will be able to hang around if the big boys start doing this?
You know, I think it's a fair question. You know, I would say in college athletics, like inequality, if inequality presents itself as you don't think your team has a chance to win the national championship, you can't compete with like the superpowers in the sport. That's a little bit different to me than inequality where you have no chance to win your own league ever, right? Where you're sort of out of it, you're out of competition for your own conference title year in and year out, which feels like more of a problem. Teams are getting innovative with how they raise money. I know that Arkansas is going to have to start, you know, there's concern that Arkansas is going to have to start passing on to. I know that the term is like, you call it an athletics fee or a
talent fee is what I heard.
Yeah, and it's something that you pass on to every student, right? You make it part of the tuition payment where it's like your tuition's going to go up. You know, you think about like a school with 250,000 students, right? Can raise quite a bit of money asking all of them for $100 or $200 extra and funneling that towards the athletic department. And if that's what schools feel like they have to do to keep – Coach, you've heard the term before when the athletic department – I would say if you're in the business of playing bowl subdivision football in the United States – the athletic department is the front porch of the university. And if you want to keep your front porch looking nice relative to your neighbors
and the light on,
you got to pay what it costs to do that. You got to view it as like a marketing fee almost. But
right.
Yeah, I mean when schools feel like they have to start charging every student an extra $200 or $300 for the privilege of going to a school that plays Division I football, I mean, then, yeah, I feel like at some point with that fundraising, students might have to start making decisions about, well, do I, you know, what do I need to prioritize when it comes to what school I go to? But no, talent fees and other ways to raise money to pay for all of this don't seem all that crazy to me at all, John.
Agreed. It's also going to be interesting to see just in an alumni base where they're doing this with season tickets, you know, for the family of four, the family of six that are getting season tickets every year. You know, that can if you have an athletic director that's already maybe in a tenuous spot at such and such school, these calls and these decisions are going to be harder and harder to make.
Yeah, I mean, I still think winning is gonna decide more about the athletic director's fate than anything else. Right, but no one wants to see empty seats.
Right.
Right? Like no one wants to see them empty and yeah, I mean I think Auburn is taking, you know, in the case of John Cohen, you know, it feels like he's taken proactive moves to put his stamp all over different programs, whether it's time he hired the football coach, he hired the men's basketball coach, he hired the softball coach, he's hired the women's basketball coach and the baseball coach. I think he had opportunities if he thought that Auburn was better off with a different baseball coach. He had opportunities to make that move and stuck with Butch Thompson. Like the success of the programs over the next couple of seasons will be a direct reflection of John Cohen. And while some of the money might play a role in what kind of teams you can have, I think ultimately how these teams do and how these coaches do is going to decide like what's the. When people talk about the John Cohen era at Auburn, what kind of stuff are they going to say? Like that's what these next couple of years I think are going to decide more than anything else.
And last point, just 10 seconds, and I'm gone. It's not just college teams doing this. If you look even at MLB, a report came out yesterday that the Braves are going likely to their own TV network starting in the 2026 season. So everybody's finding new ways to invent the wheel and get revenue. But thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, so some of these TV deals, you know, some of these companies are going broke trying to pay for them. And that's something that that can cause real inequality at the baseball level. I also still think that part of the problem in baseball is you got some guys that worth $1 billion. Ooh. Your team brought in $400-500 million in revenue last year. Yeah. How come you're not signing free agents?
Yeah.
How come you're not where's that going? Is it going to your new boat? Like where's all that team revenue going?
Going
like
somewhere.
It's going. Yeah. I mean, if it's going to go into somebody's pockets, I'd rather it go into the right fielder's pockets than the owner's pockets. You know what I mean? But I mean that's where. Anyways,
crazy.
We're going to talk. It will buy a pretty nice boat though.
For sure.
Yeah, we'll get you
a lot of boat.
A lot of boat. The 334-321-1390 is the number. We are going to be putting the calls on hold for just a second though, because we're going to talk with our pal Jake Crane when we come back. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Auburn IT delivers professional IT support to businesses across Alabama and Georgia. Locally owned and operated.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Coach Don Dunn. Bill Cameron out today, remembering our friend Philip Marshall, and we welcome him back to the show tomorrow. Should have Jason in the house as well tomorrow, and that's, look, a lot of, well, you know what, maybe not, because
signing day.
Yeah, it's National Signing Day, and Alex Golish.
Press conference.
Yeah, Alex Golish is talking to the media just before the show starts, and both coordinators talking to the media as well. Bill's going to try to go to as much of that as possible. Mm-hmm. I think Jacob is going to help step in and bring the show in. I've got a Troy game.
I'll be here
tomorrow. I think Drew's going to be in tomorrow as well. So, you know, it's going to be all hands on deck. But you know, Bill wants to be able to go to as much of that Alex Golish press conference tomorrow as he can, and check out, you know, for first chance to talk with the coordinators as well, Coach Durkin and Coach Gordon. So it's it's National Signing Day. So a lot going on. Even though it's Auburn's bye week in men's basketball, and Iron Bowl of basketball should be huge on Saturday. Let's bring in someone we talked to in the second hour every Tuesday, a good friend of ours and someone that we always enjoy reaching out to, and that's our buddy Jake Crane from Crane and Cohen, which I'm getting better at saying Crane and Cohen, the new place where you can catch Jake and company.
Yeah, man, literally, I accidentally say it sometimes still too. So no, I totally get it, and appreciate y'all having me.
Jake, a lot of different stuff going on, including a National Signing Day tomorrow. But I kind of want to start with Auburn men's basketball, because they were one of the hotter teams in the league going into this weekend. Tennessee just matched them punch for punch there in Knoxville. And now it feels like a really important break for Auburn before they get a really important stretch of basketball underway. Home against Alabama, home against Vanderbilt, at Arkansas, a three-game stretch that I think could have a lot of say in what Auburn's tournament resume looks like.
Yeah, I mean, obviously when the league is this mismatched, and I think A&M's going to come back down to earth a little bit. I still think Florida is the best team in the league. That's not a crazy thing to say, but every game is massive, and trying to create some separation and really get to that 9-win mark. I think that 9-win mark would make you feel really good. I think if you get 10 or more, obviously win a game or two in the SEC tournament, you can really position yourself for a pretty good seed. But look, I don't think it's too complicated what you see with this Auburn basketball team. If you'd have told me that they'd have won 2 out of 3 games on the road at Ole Miss, at Ford, and Tennessee, I would have taken that in spades and walked away and you'd have never seen me again. But as much as people want to talk about Pettiford, and from a scoring standpoint, he hasn't done what a lot of people thought him. Really, what he's getting paid to do, he's affecting the game in other ways. But I still think this season's going to come down to how Keyshawn Murphy plays down low. Jovic can only do so much because he's undersized, and he makes up for it with hustle and grit, and that's great. But when Keyshawn Murphy plays physical, when Keyshawn Murphy protects the rim, Auburn becomes a different team. And if they're going to not only continue to have success, but have big success, he is going to have to really embrace being nasty, being physical, and realize he is not a finesse big. He has to be a physical, mauler, tone-setting type guy to let everybody else do their thing and for Auburn to have a legitimate chance to do something special.
Just feels like the common thread of those Auburn wins after Missouri was that Auburn was more comfortable being the bully around the basket,
yeah.
Right? Kicking sand in the opponent's faces there, whether it was South Carolina or Ole Miss or even Florida, which was a team that I think a lot of folks expected to be the one kicking the sand in that game, and then Texas. Yeah, that's how Auburn got back into that game and started playing inside out first by winning and pushing Texas around under the basket. And it just seems like it's going to be tough for Auburn if they can't impose their will that way against opponents. Then it turns into, well, you need to win a jump shooting contest. And that's something Auburn's
winning a lot of those.
That's the thing. That's something like Auburn's been able to overcome bad jump shooting in some of these games, but against Tennessee, you almost had to be able to. And credit to Tennessee, right, for gambling that's what they needed to make Auburn do in order to win. But it was, Tennessee was a team. I don't know if everyone can in the SEC, but Tennessee was a team that could match Auburn's physicality. And force Auburn to start trying to hit those long shots.
Well, you know, what gives you hope is Auburn has matched or exceeded the physicality of both Houston and Florida.
Yeah.
Those are the two out, and they played Arizona. Tough to handle. They're all around. They played Michigan. I think Michigan was the best basketball team in the world on that night, if you remember. I don't know if anybody was coming within 10 points of them that night.
I think Arizona was probably the best basketball team on the planet the night Auburn went to Tucson, too.
Yeah, right? Look, you've played against the best. You know that you can hang physically. It's just like anything. It's tough to do it over and over and over again when you don't have depth to do it.
Yeah.
It has to be the same guys doing it every night, and that's the predicament that Auburn is in. But, Dan, to the point about the not shooting the ball well, I think Auburn's got good shooters. They're just not shooting it well. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but we've seen what Overton can do when he gets hot. Keyshawn Hall's just a walking bucket, the most consistent guy you got. Tahad's typically a better shooter than what he's been this season. I think Freeman can shoot it. Murphy's shown the ability to shoot the three. So a lot of guys can shoot the three, but the problem becomes when that shot's not falling, Auburn has to beat teams defensively, rebounding, and at the free throw line. And when you've watched these wins, what are the three common themes in the wins? They're shooting free throws better. That cost them games early, even when they were physical and played defense. They're playing defense better, switching, communicating, not giving up easy buckets, making teams hit shots, and then rebounding, offensive and defensive. If you can do those three things, you don't have to rely on the jump shot. And that, just like in football, when you got a great pass game and a good run game and the pass game isn't working or it's windy and cold and rainy, you can turn around and hand that thing off and get away with it. So that's where Auburn is. The coaches know that. I think anybody that's watched them knows that. But they should be a lot more confident in this Bama game. It's always big if you played Bama, regardless if both teams were undefeated or both teams were winless. But especially see what happens in this A&M Bama game tomorrow. It could be a chance to put Alabama out of the race.
I'm glad you mentioned the depth because that's something where when you look at this team, like, I mean, you've got look, the health situation with Aporum is unfortunate and sort of it's beside the point. Bashir had some uneven performances and then, you know, started missing games for health reasons. I think it's the back.
Yeah, he isn't physically ready either.
Though. Yeah.
I don't think it'd be tough for him to guard a lot of people when they got downhill in this league.
And then you have Magwood and Walker, who appear to be healthy scratches for Auburn right now on a pretty routine basis. And Steven will tell you it's because of their defense. Like, I don't know if folks thought that the rotation was going to be down to seven guys. But I think that's also informed the identity of this team. I think folks maybe thought, oh, you're going to have a wide open up and down, you know, race you to 100, race you to 110 points kind of team. And it's like, no, they need to slow it down and grind it out and you know, win slugfests if they're going to win, because it's tough to play up tempo with a point guard who's got to play 35 plus minutes a game in conference play every time.
No, without a doubt. And look who your head coach is.
Yep.
BP was an offensive guy and a special teams guy. Steven's a defensive guy. So typically the teams that do the best with their head coaches are the teams that take on that identity. Now, that doesn't mean you never score, but your identity doesn't have to be offense to be a good offensive team. So I think you're seeing Auburn kind of coalesce to that. And, you know, we just talked about this in the transfer portal with the football team. It happens in real time during the season. Sometimes you got to trim the fat. Sometimes you just got to do it. And I know Auburn, and this is a credit to Bruce, is used to playing 27 guys. Not everybody can do that. But at the end of the day, you got to put the guys out there that give you the best chance to win the most. And if you're bleeding, you got to find a way to stop the bleeding. And it feels like Steven found the right bandage to put on the team. And I don't think it's a coincidence, and there are obviously different circumstances for each player, that the minute Auburn stopped spreading out the minute, they got a lot better a lot quicker. I don't think that happens by coincidence or by accident. I think that was the plan, and the plan has worked so far. And they need to use this week to rest up, because they're going to have to really – Jovich and Murphy are going to tell the story. If they're good – the shooting's going to come back at some point. It may not come back every game. It typically doesn't. But what a beautiful sight it would be is if you turned into this brawling, defensive, rebounding, physical mindset team that wants to be nasty, and then all of a sudden the shots start falling, and those two things come together to create a tidal wave at just the right time. I think that, to me, is the perfect scenario for Auburn and what Steven and the staff is hoping for.
And that's what they did in the second half against Texas, right? I mean, you saw that defensive vice while also producing.
But Dan, Texas could have put a blindfold on and thrown it backwards and made it in the first half. The only guy who really translated both halves was Swain, because he's an NBA player. I mean, they were making shots. They couldn't miss. Heidi, you could have cut both his arms off and he would have headbutted it in from the three-point line the way it was going.
But that second half offensively for Auburn, I mean, you had a team turn it on to the point where they were, you know, they were at plus two points per possession in the second half until the very end of the of the game. I mean, five of the seven guys in the rotation hit threes that night for Texas. Like, I think you've seen glimpses of what you're talking about. It's the thought of doing it consistently, and especially doing it against the best teams on your schedule, that's really tantalizing.
Well, the trick is, and you guys have played basketball. Coach, y'all played pickup basketball. Even if you didn't play at a high level, or you just played high school, or you just played middle school, as much as you tell a basketball player, don't let your offense affect your defense, it's really hard to not let your offense affect your defense.
Exactly.
Especially if you're an offensive guy. It's amazing Texas in the first half when all their shots were falling. Boy, they were down in the stance. They were flying to the ball. They were communicating switches. But then all of a sudden in the second half, and I want to make sure and give credit to Auburn here, the shots aren't falling. Well, now the lane's open. Now you're getting back down. Yeah. Now you're getting caught out of a stance or not getting back in transition. And Steven talks about this all the time. Coach Pearl talks about this all the time. You know, if you can get to a point, and this is where Houston is just, this is why they're always in it. They play the same way. The shots go in. The shots don't go in. It's a backyard bar fight. And I think that's what good teams do, is they don't let one side of the ball or one end of the court affect the other end.
And some, you know, I would add to that, though, like I thought Texas in general let fatigue get to them and, you know, influence their offense and influence their defense. And Kelvin Sampson will tell you before anybody, he'll tell you defense is conditioning, right? Defense is, especially in that second half of a game, like you want to keep playing that way. Like that's or, you know, you'll start to see in transition and in defense and, you know, those long shots start to hit front iron. And it's like, that's a team that's, and that's where inserting an extra player, I think, would maybe help, you know, some of the minutes as far as Auburn's rotation, but you can't give a guy minutes for that reason. And the longer, Jake, the longer this team plays with seven, it's going to be harder to insert an eighth, whether it's Magwood, whether it's Walker, whether it's Bashir, and have it sort of go seamlessly.
Well, it's here's the thing, Dan. The biggest question is, can they physically do it? To me, when you look at the three guys that you just talked about, Bashir, Magwood, and Walker, I think Magwood is the only one athletically and physically, and he's not a big guy, but there's ways to do it if you're quick enough. Tahad has kind of figured that out a little bit. I still don't understand why we just don't take a page out of the Jared Harper book and somebody draw a charge at point. Please, being undersized, you only have certain arrows in the quiver. Jared Harper was an absolute witch. And listen, Wendell Green was pretty good at it, too, at drawing charges. It's just, I know the rules have changed and it's a little bit different, but I watched Auburn get called for five charges the other night, so apparently they're still calling it. But I think Magwood physically, Walker, I don't think is quick enough. He's bitten, as my daughter, you can hear right here. Magwood is quick enough. I don't think Walker's quick enough, and I don't think Bashir is strong enough right now. So you really probably got only one guy that can actually help. And if he gets hot offensively, he's nice. But you're right. It we are dealing with human beings. And basketball is nothing but cross country with a ball and a hoop in it. You got to be able to run for a while.
Yeah, this is a bye week. Could be a chance to take another look at Magwood or Walker and consider the possibility of moving the rotation to eight. But right now I could see – you know, I could see Steven looking at the value of the defense he's getting from the seven. Well, you know, it's a big one Saturday against Alabama. You have the bye week; they don't. You're at home; they aren't, and these three games feel really important.
Yeah, well, I just hope Alabama doesn't get Giannis on their team before the game on Saturday. Apparently, the way this thing is going,
trade deadline coming up. I mean, you never know.
Well, look, I'm telling you, man, Bob Knight had a great quote. There's no better teacher than that bench over there. It's the best teacher there is. And if you sat on that, I'm sure Magwood has started probably every game of his whole life. And think about how it must feel to not only get benched, but you get benched and the team got better.
Yeah.
So what does that mean about you? What do you have to do to be able to make yourself more valuable to the team? So that's what I'm hoping happens, because the kid's super talented.
Great stuff, Jake. Real quick, we're going to talk with Alex Golish tomorrow, National Signing Day coming up, and curious as to, you know, how you think he's navigated the waters thus far since getting the job.
Man, I think he's done a good job. I mean, you've got to change the culture, and it's hard to change the culture with all the same people. But then at the end of the day, you need talent. You need depth to win in this league. And I think he's brought over not only the right players, but the right type of players to set that foundation, because this is a huge year. Even with the transfer portal and NIL, you can still set a foundation and a culture. I mean, look at what Cignetti did. And if you look, Cignetti kind of did it the same way. He brought the best players from James Madison over to Indiana. They brought their culture over to Indiana. It infected the whole team in the best way an infection can be. And you saw what that program and that team has turned into. I'm hoping we get the same from Golish. Look, he's going to be great in press conferences. But at the end of the day, he understands this, and the real ones understand this. You don't win extensions at press conferences. The only press conferences that matter are the ones after you've won the big games. And Coach Dunn tell you more than anybody, he's been in it more than anybody at the highest level. It all the talking in front of the mic, you can say the perfect thing. You can do a 5-minute stand-up comedy routine that they love so much they put on Netflix. But if you don't beat Baylor, none of that matters off the rip.
Right.
Outstanding stuff, Jake. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, man. Well, we actually just had a great show talking about Auburn with Zach Blackerby. Go to our YouTube channel. It's Crane and Cone. C-R-A-I-N and Cone. It's easy to find. We're still talking some college football right now, but college basketball, we're about to start it. I'm excited about it, man. It's going to be an interesting next couple months.
Jake Crane from Crane and Cone. Always appreciate your point of view. Jake, be well. We'll talk to you again soon.
Definitely, and I appreciate you guys having me.
See you, bud.
Thank you.
All right, we will take a break, and we'll come back to wrap things up. You are listening to The Drive.
It's time for something new.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Coach, as always, huge thanks for
thank you. Enjoyed it.
For contributing. I really enjoyed getting to talk to you as well. Real quick.
Okay.
What's a tip you have for folks who are going to be on the grill this weekend for the Super Bowl? Right. What would you okay. what do you got for them?
Back to the wings. Right. I always brine my wings the night before. I'll boil some salt water, some brown sugar, some black pepper, a little garlic salt, and let it completely cool, then soak my wings overnight in that brine. Sometimes I put pickle juice in it, too.
Ooh, like you think of like a plastic bag?
You go just in a big pot.
Big pot, okay.
In the refrigerator.
In the fridge?
Yeah.
That's Chick-fil-A trick. Pickle juices, yeah.
A lot, but just a little, some Worcestershire sauce, a beer, whatever you
okay,
got.
Okay, yeah.
Pour it in there.
Just get some
or
flavor.
Drink it and then pour it in.
Get some flavor to the party.
Oh yeah, and then pat them dry and then spray a little olive oil on them.
What about any citrus could play
you
in
could
here?
You could put some
lemon.
When
limes?
I do my turkeys, I put orange in it.
Okay. Oh, I like.
Boil it all up. Let it come to a complete cool down and.
And then how's the chicken getting cooked on the
I just put them. I'll either put them on the grill,
okay,
or smoker, low heat, about 350 or less, or in the oven.
And you get let them crisp up.
Yeah.
Man, sounds
put
sounds
a little
good.
Season on a little olive oil.
That's information for life right there, Coach. Thank you, thank you,
thank you, guys.
We'll
be here tomorrow.
Yeah, Coach is back tomorrow. We'll have an adventure tomorrow, National Signing Day. Bill
really changed.
Bill's going to talk to the head coach and both assistants before coming in tomorrow as well, along with the rest of the beat. You're not going to want to miss any of that. I'll be back on Thursday. Big thanks to Andy Burcham for joining us in hour number one, and Jake Crane for joining us in hour number two. And Coach, again, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All the callers and listeners as well. We will be back tomorrow. Until then, good night.